Hi there, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. This time I'm going to begin with the tenor who we think of as British, but was really as much American as he was British, and he ended up living in Austria anyway. That was the country he really loved. Born in England, Alfred Pickover was soon taken by his parents, who were trying to improve their lot in life, to the USA, where, at the time, it was a place where you could live your dream. And it was there that he was trained to be a singer, and after which he went to Prague, where he completed his studies with somebody called Ludmila Prochaska Neumann. Great name. This led him to a contract with a sort of German opera house in Prague, where he made his debut in 1907, and he soon became very popular and was even invited to appear as guest in the touring company starring the legendary baritone Mattia Battistini, who must have liked him, because he then followed the company to Vienna, where the Vienna Hofoper seemed to like him as well. However, by 1912, he was already giving his first performance in the main Vienna State Opera and became a permanent fixture there. He had a wonderful voice. He's really one of the great tenors, almost to be compared with Caruso, Gilli, Björling, the greats. The only thing that he lacks sometimes is some emotional intensity. It somehow seems that it's so easy for him to sing, even the top notes, that he doesn't put any sort of effort and passion into it. That's the only thing that I can criticize him for. Otherwise, wonderful singer. For some reason or other, despite the fact that his American nationality kept him out of trouble in World War I, he reverted to being British afterwards, which turned out to be just as well, because when the Nazis turned up, he was able to live in England from the early 30s. However, as soon as World War II was over, he rushed back to Vienna, where he spent the rest of his life, and where, of course, he was loved. This time I'm going to give you his late 20s recording of one of the great tenor arias from Il Trovatore. It's called Ah sì ben mio, and this is Pickover's version of it. It's one of the best versions. Were he around now, he would certainly be a total superstar. Nobody's in this class anymore, even the best of them. So, Alfred Pickover. Oh. Alfred Pickhaver. Now, normally at this point, I go back in time and we play some pre-World War I music call track. But just for change, I'm going to come forward now. The early 50s was a strange time in popular music. This was at the end of great popular singers like Bing Crosby, Ella Fitzgerald, Peggy Lee, although they carried on singing till the 60s because they were already famous. And it wasn't until halfway through the 50s that rock and roll came upon the scene. You got skiffle in England and a bit of folk music. But mainly the first part of the 50s was a mixture of all sorts of wannabe American songsters, people who wanted to be like, should we say, Doris Day, but in England, the British version of it. And even with the American ones, they started having to sing, instead of great songs by people like Cole Porter, sort of little novelty songs, little poppy tunes. One of the reasons why the word pop music got a bad name. One of the people who fell into this category had actually been born in Hungary. She was a pretty girl who came to live in England for a while, having been born in Hungary and educated in Switzerland. And she was discovered by the bandleader Geraldo when she was already living in South Africa. And she was persuaded to come home, become a pop singer. She had big success with things like Pickin' a Chicken and the track that I'm going to play you now, her first hit, which was called Sugar Bush. It's a nothing song. On the back of this 78 is a much better sort of ballad, but I'm going to play you the thing that made her famous in England. This is how bad the taste of people for pop music was in the early 50s. Or maybe that was just what they were played on the radio. If you don't hear anything else, that's what you think the best stuff is. It's rather like what's happening today, really. Anyhow, Eve Boswell, originally born as Eva Kelly, she was born in 1922, so she would have been about 30 when she made this. She died in 1998. Anybody who lived through the 50s will remember Eve Boswell. This is one of her hit tracks.
Sugar Bush, I love you so. Never let you go. Don't you let my mother know. Sugar Bush, I love you so. Sugar Bush, come dance with me. Let the other fellas be. Dance the polka merrily. Sugar Bush, come dance with me.
Oh, we never not gonna go home. We won't go, we won't go. Oh, we never not gonna go home.
My mother isn't home. Oh, Sugar Bush, I love you so. I will never let you go. Don't you let my mother know. Sugar Bush, I love you so. Take a bucket, fill your head. Take a bucket, fill your head. Take a bucket, fill your head. What are your mama duff and say?
And following a 1950s British pop singer, I'm now going to play you a British jazz musician. This gentleman, who was actually born in France but was very British, gloried in a name which was Rupert Edward Lee, what looks like Featherstone Hall, but I believe is pronounced Fanshawe, because English is like that. He was known as Buddy, however. Buddy Fanshawe began playing saxophone pretty early in life, and by the early 30s was proficient enough to be hired in the band that backed Louis Armstrong, who was touring. And he was obviously a jazz fan, and obviously from his style, he was very influenced by Coleman Hawkins. He went on to play with all sorts of people in the 30s, Fletcher Allen, Vallida Snow, Benny Carter, and during the war ran one of the bands that was allowed by the Royal Air Force. In his band he actually had Jack Parnell, famous drummer whom I knew personally, and so forth. Well, after the war, this little group went on to record as the BBC Radio Rhythm Club Sextet, and then he toured Iceland with it, and later on worked as a car salesman because, oh, I didn't tell you this, in between playing saxophone, he occasionally decided to become a racing car driver and actually won a Grand Prix race on one occasion in the mid-30s. In the mid-50s, he returned to play again in another little, more slightly more modern lineup jazz group, including Kenny Wheeler and Bobby Wellens, whom I heard many times. And they toured the Middle East in the mid-50s, after which he retired again, only to die at the age of about 67. He's a fine player, Buddy Fanshawe. Not much remembered now, but his records are very good. This one is interesting because it was made in 1944 during the war. As I said before, he was obviously a Coleman Hawkins fan. You could tell that by the way he played, his tone and everything. And yet here, this little British group were doing what was obviously a Count Basie number, which was quite modern and hip back then. But of course, instead of having a sound like Lester Young, he sounded like Coleman Hawkins. So the combination is rather interesting. And I think, considering these are British people, he'd come on a lot in 10 years. I've heard his early records and they're not like this. I'm very impressed with the musicianship and understanding of a British group as early as the mid-40s. To sound, I mean, if you told people this was an American band, people would believe you. I mean, they're that good. They hadn't yet digested the brand new stuff that was to be known as bebop. This is very much late 30s swing, but done very well. So let's listen again to the little group run during the war by Buddy Fanshawe, 1 o'clock jump. Thank you. Buddy Fanshawe. Well, so far I've not played any acoustic recordings this time round, so this is the time when one will come in. This recording dates from around 1910. Among the great coloratura sopranos, we have Gallicurci, Tetrazzini, and a large number of them were Italian, one or two English-speaking people like Melba, but there are actually quite a few Spanish sopranos who somehow seem to have been forgotten. I've already played you one track of Josefina Hugue, Maria Galvani, and now it's going to be the turn of Elvira de Hidalgo. She started teaching in 1933, and became most famous for one of her pupils, who was called Maria Callas. Maria Callas later wrote of her that she owed all her preparation and her artistic formation as an actress and musician. Unfortunately, Elvira de Hidalgo wasn't able to give Maria Callas her voice, because she had a much better voice than Callas had. She was born in 1891 and died in 1980. She made her debut at the age of 16, and so when she made her records, she was very, very young indeed. 1910, she was hardly 20, but her records show a very mature and wonderful artist, even then. She studied with Melchiorre Vidal, who also taught another famous Spanish coloratura, Maria Barrientos, and she was in that tradition of great Spanish coloratura sopranos. She had a career which lasted, I say, till 1933, which means she was only about 42 when she retired. It seems very young to us, but they tended to do that in those days, and as I say, became a teacher from there on in. Luckily, she did make a few recordings. This one is not a coloratura aria, and it was, like many of her arias, something also recorded by the great Amanita Gallicurci. Well, maybe nobody can quite match Gallicurci, but de Hidalgo's version of this Russian aria is wonderful. It's the Chanson Hindoue from Sadko, recorded in 1910, and it's just wonderful. So without more ado, here it is.
Oh,
And from a great Spanish coloratura soprano, we stay in the Hispanic peninsula, but we move a little bit west and we go to the country Portugal. As some of you will know, I'm a great fan of Brazilian music, and in Brazil, of course, they speak Portuguese. But the lady I'm going to play you a recording of now was a very, very famous Portuguese singer, not a classical singer, but a specialist in that sort of music which might be called the Portuguese blues. It's called fado, and the lady who sings that sort of music is called a fadista. This lady was the most famous of them all, born in 1920. She died in 1999. Many people called her a rainha do fado, the queen of fado, and many people know her just by her first name, which was Amália. She was, of course, Amália Rodrigues. She made fado famous worldwide, and she recorded over a period of 50 years, selling over, 30 million records. I said before in this podcast that the early 50s was a strange in-between period, and a lot of pop singers did these sort of harmless but boring and really not particularly inspiring little songs. But it was also a time when people would be willing to try foreign songs. It was at that time that we had hits from Italy, for instance. And certainly the most famous fado of them all was recorded by Amália Rodrigues around 1952. And in English it was called April in Portugal, although the real title was Coimbra. That was the original title in Portuguese. I remember hearing this as a little boy. It's one tune that sticks in my head. I didn't even know where I'd heard it, but it was, of course, her major hit, probably how she was introduced to the world. So this is Amália Rodrigues at the beginning of her popularity. She would have been 30. Back then she went to America, was on the top TV show. She did the whole thing, having been discovered in the early 40s, discovered by the Portuguese ambassador in Madrid. And, well, I could talk for a long time about her career, but just one example. She performed at the Great Olympia Theatre in Paris for 10 seasons between 1956 and 1992. 10 times in that period. She was one of those people you can truly call a legend. Wonderful voice of her type, and she sang the fado in precisely the way it's supposed to be sung. So without more ado, I give you her most famous hit, Coimbra, or as we all knew it, April in Portugal, 1952. Coimbra, uma lição de sombra e tradição. O lento é uma canção. E aprende-se a dizer saudade. Coimbra do choval ainda és capital do amor em Portugal ainda. Coimbra onde uma vez com lágrimas te fez uma história desta Inês tão linda. Coimbra das canções tão meiga que nos pões os nossos corações a nu. Coimbra dos doutores para nós os teus cantores na ponte do amor. Music whispers I love you. Great Amalia Rodriguez. And I'm going to return to the topic of British jazz, and this time to a gentleman I actually knew personally. When I came back from university, I started attending a place in West London called the 606 Club. I still occasionally go there, even now. But when I was young, I met a couple of older established jazz musicians who still used to go there, one of which was this gentleman, and his name was Vic Ashe. I hadn't fully understood how well known he was in the jazz world, and have only discovered that later on. Vic Ashe was born in 1930 and he died in 2014. He began playing professionally around 1950 and he joined Kenny Baker's band, one of our top trumpeters of the day, along with another young musician who sadly didn't live very long but had a tremendous reputation amongst the more modern jazz-orientated fans, and his name was Tubby Hayes. Vic, however, always stayed with earlier forms of jazz. There was a sort of big battle in the 40s between people known as Moldy Old Figs, the people who liked only New Orleans music from 1920, and the boppers, the ones who followed people like Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. But there always was a third way, the form of jazz we still call mainstream. It used some of the modern ideas, but it still stuck to more melodic approaches to jazz. And that's what Vic Ashe did. And indeed, although he played saxophone, I think his main instrument was always clarinet, which was regarded as being a sort of forgotten instrument amongst modern jazz fans. Nevertheless, he enjoyed lots of success and was asked very soon to back people like Hoagy Carmichael, the great songwriter, and Cab Calloway when they toured England in the 50s. He had his own group and was a great favourite amongst jazz fans in Great Britain. He even had his own radio programme at one point. He then recorded with the great Maxine Sullivan, somebody else whom I met, only this case I met her as an old lady in New York. And he even had the honour in 1959 of being the only British jazz group playing at the Newport Jazz Festival that year. So that was how important Vic Ashe was in the British jazz scene. In his later years, he tended to be one of the most in-demand session musicians. If you were putting together a big band, for instance, the BBC Big Band, you would immediately call Vic Ashe up. One of his favourite gigs, I know, was backing Frank Sinatra whenever he was over in Europe. I remember having arguments with him because I've never been a great Sinatra fan, at least in terms of him being able to swing and phrase properly, whereas Vic thought he was great. I was lucky enough to have Vic play on one of my own recordings, and I may play that as my own track following this one now. But this is Vic at the beginning of his career back in 1954, so he was only 24 years old when he recorded this with this little quintet, and as you'll hear, it's not old-fashioned, it's not ultra-modern, it's right in the middle, what we call mainstream. This is a fine tune called Lullaby of the Leaves, and I'm glad I found this 78 of Vic, because it's nice to remember him. A fine friend who ended his days living in a little house up in Golders Green, having been born in the East End 84 years earlier. Vic Ashe then, playing Lullaby of the Leaves with his quintet of 1954. Thank you. young Vic Ash. Well, 35 years on, when I met Vic down at the 606 Club, along with another highly in-demand session musician called Bill Skeet, who tended more to play tenor, I invited them to take part in a recording of one of my own songs, which I'd written in the style of Louis Jordan. And this was recorded, late 80s, early 90s. And it was arranged by an American jazz guitarist who was around. And we all went down to a recording studio in Willesden and did it. Possibly slightly too fast, but anyway, for what it is, I'll let you hear it now. But the main reason I'm playing this is because Bill Skeet and Vic Ash are on it. So this is the song I wrote back then, and it's called I'll Never Do a Show Like That No More. And with that, I say au revoir till next time, with the usual reminder that I have lots of 78s for sale, so do get in touch. You can contact me on spats47@ntlworld.com. And of course, to tell all your friends about this podcast, spread the word, and let's have everybody listening to 78s. Once again, au revoir till next time.
The nightmare seemed to start when the plane came in late. And then of course the baggage came and left through the gate. I tried to seek for customs, but it wasn't no good. The man took one look at me and said I was a hood. The customs went through everything, man, that was so. Until I said, don't bug me, Mac, cause I gotta go. Well, that was it, they took me, shook me right through a door, and emptied all the pockets of the case on the floor. I'll never do a show like that no more. Not even for the biggest brand in the world. I'll never do a show like that no more. So listen, Jack, don't hold me back, cause I'm going home. Well, 2 hours later, there I'm standing in front of the line, and someone jumps my taxi. I shout, hey, but that's mine. I finally grab a cab and tell him straight to the show. But he don't talk no English and don't know where to go. Well, just in time I get there, man, and what do I see? There's some cat singing up on stage and it should be me. The big promoter panicked and got someone else quick. Give me a drink, somebody think I'm gonna be sick. I'll never do a show like that no more. Not even for the biggest bread in the world. I'll never do a show like that no more. So listen, Jack, don't hold me back, cause I'm going home. Turned on the juice, and all the chicks are hanging on the words that I said, when all of a sudden the mic cuts out dead. Well, that was it. I went to find the man with the dough, but out in front of people weren't too pleased with the show. They all got paid their money back, but when I got through, the man said, but I'm scared of them, I ain't scared of you. I never do a show like that no more. Not even for the biggest bread in the world. I never do a show like that no more. So listen, Jack, don't hold me back, cause I'm going home. So listen, Jack, don't hold me back, cause I'm going home. So listen, Jack, don't hold me back, cause I'm going home. Ah, forget it.